The high school I attend, like most other high schools in the world, ranks kids based upon their cumulative GPAs. I don't really know if it's most other high schools in the world, but a vast majority, I would assume. When one takes an honors or AP class, they gain 0.025 points on his or her cumulative grade point average, specifically at our school, which translates to a 0.025 raw addition to one's grade point average after 4 years. So if one took one honors class and held straight A's throughout all his or her high school years, one would have a 4.025 GPA. These meager 0.025 additions add up. For many of the top learners take upwards of 4 to 6 honors classes per semester. This adds up to 0.025 added on per semester. For example, this year I am taking 6 honors classes and 2 AP classes. And for next year, I am signed up for 8 honors classes and 5 AP classes. I think it'll be changing to 7 honors classes and 4 AP classes, for I am planning on skipping another grade of math. And at this time, it'll be my junior year, the year of the ACT and the SAT, so that's going to be fun. I'm near the very top of my class, but even my GPA is but an ant compared to the mountainous GPAs of a few of my peers. Only a few, but a fair amount, like 6%, which is still a lot, because considering 2/3 of the people don't really try, sounds about right. The top 10 students in the class are composed of 9 girls and 1 boy. That boy is not me, for I am right now 18th. I get it. I'm not good at school. I get it. The fact that the top 10 is so obviously lopsided towards my female peers may seem astounding, but the top 10 is not the only rank at which this occurs. In the top 50%, females in my grade hold significantly more members than males in my grade, and males tend to occupy a significant proportion of the bottom 25% of the class. Such lopsided data will likely cause for my female readers an air of superiority, and for my male readers an air of contempt and mortification. Before my males fret in inferiority and my females indulge in superiority, let us explore why school is lopsided towards females, and subsequently, let us explore why careers are lopsided towards males. Before this topic is discussed, understand that I am a man myself, so this chapter is especially difficult for me to craft, especially considering I also have a very large ego, and I kind of wish to keep it, but in the case of this high school dilemma, in the case where girls do far better in school than boys, we have a significant problem for me because I'm a boy and I want to do good in school. But before this topic is discussed, though, it's still difficult for me to craft. Also because I'm in love with school, but I guess the biggest problem is that I rarely put in a lot of effort to get good grades. I really just like to learn. The big part is I like to learn, and honestly, I just say grades come with that. If you want to be there, then you're going to get good grades. It's just how it works. I'm going to be honest. And even those AP classes, none of them are inherently difficult. They're just kind of there. I like that I'm able to teach myself the topics through the book. That's my favorite part about AP classes, to be honest. The best part about an AP class is that you're able to take it for the textbook, and you can actually not have to worry about classes, not have to worry about assignments, but you can just read the textbook, and you'll be able to understand enough information to score well on tests, and you'll learn enough. That's my favorite part. I love to read the A-Push textbook. The A-Push textbook was my favorite textbook ever, and arguably one of my favorite books ever. It was very interesting. But in a regular class or an honors class, there's no such thing as a textbook for the most part, so that's why AP classes are better. But even so, none of them are really inherently difficult. None of them are difficult classes. They're just relatively slow-paced, I guess. I don't know. They're not inherently difficult. They're just, if you like to learn, of course, as I said earlier, you will do fine. But anyways, this particular topic attacks my pride, as I said, but even so, it is important to remain unbiased and simply communicate scientific data. And there is a lot of it in this. We are going to be talking about 2 separate studies, one conducted by LinkedIn and another conducted by researchers, just general researchers. In 2014, a plethora of research from 1914 to 2011, so 98 years, because you also have to include 2011 itself, which holds research on 538,710 boys and 595,332 girls, which is over 1.2 million. That's a, or not quite, over 1.1 million. That's 1.135 million or 132 million girls in the United States. 34. I'm correcting my math a lot right now. It's, I'm just going to add it up right now. It's 1,134,042. Boom. Okay, sorry. In the United States, Norway, Canada, Turkey, Germany, I don't know why my brain works so slowly there, Taiwan, Malaysia, Israel, New Zealand, Australia, Sweden, Slovakia, and United Kingdom, Africa, and Finland. It included countries from all those countries. That's a lot of countries. Countries represented by one sample included, oh goodness, even more, Belgium, the Czech Republic, Estonia, Mexico, Hong Kong, India, Iran, the Netherlands, Portugal, Saudi Arabia, Serbia, and Slovenia was used to examine the grade differences, the grade point differences, and overall school performance differences based upon gender differences. The results of the research concluded that panic over a boy crisis in which boys' grades were plummeting while girls' grades were remaining similar was irrational, for girls have done consistently better than boys in school for several decades without any inconsistencies, especially not any recent inconsistencies. The most heartbreaking finding in this entire research, out of all of this research, is that not only do girls do significantly better in language and social classes than do boys, but they also do comparably better in math and science classes, which are stereotyped to be favored towards boys, as they generally are, would seem to be favored towards boys. They're more logical classes, and generally, I don't want to make a generalization here, generally males are slightly, but not really much more logical. Or like logic more, I guess. But even then, I mean, there's not much of a difference because we're all humans and humans are all very emotional, to be honest. Very emotional and very not logical in many situations. Logic just doesn't exist. Logic is an impediment, even though it is never an impediment. It just seems to us to be an impediment. That is an illusion. Illusion, not illusion. But even so, while girls tend to get better grades than boys, boys do generally do significantly better on one-time tests that are based less upon academic work ethic and more upon academic talent and competitiveness. Now, don't fret, my female listeners. Do not worry, my female listeners, for this does not give the entire significance to something. It's not really the biggest thing if you want to look at it. When it comes down to it, even abilities can be a little, they're not lopsided. It may seem like that because boys do better on tests, but they're not lopsided. The real reason is because boys just go and cram to study for that test, and then because they're competitive, it's an ego booster. To get 100,000 or to get 100% on a test is an ego booster. I'm going to be completely honest. I got 100, basically, over 100 on my A-Push final exam, and I was very prideful about that. That really boosted my ego. The weird thing was I didn't really study for it, so I was kind of surprised that I got that good of a score, because the average score was like a 62%. I got like a 93, so I don't know what happened there. That was pure luck, to be honest. But even then, let's probably get back into this. Girls often perform better in school than boys for a variety of reasons, in spite of the fact that they often perform poorly in comparison to their male counterparts. While the potential reasons for which girls outperform boys in school are not iron solid, they can contribute to a decent understanding of the reasons pertaining to girls' outperformance of boys in school. Just one quick thing. I am kind of a little stressed out because I have a lot of tests. Technically, not really. I'm not stressed out. It's just 8:36 p.m. on a Sunday night, and yeah, that explains it. But I've been a little lacking with these episodes for sure. Normally, I would make these on a Saturday, a week earlier than this, but I've been working on other things. I spent 7 hours yesterday writing a 10-page essay. It was. I don't really have a very good work ethic. That's the problem. I have a lot of time, and I have a lot of time to do a lot of crazy stuff, but I don't have the stress to make me lose my mind and make sure I go fast. Maybe I could use to do some more work. I think I could probably use to do a little bit more work. But anyways, still, let's just get into this, of course. The first reason for this is simply how school works. In American schools, final grades are based more on a student's work ethic than on a student's understanding of the class. The researchers who analyzed the data from over a million students cited what they considered to be that global schools catered more towards girls' talents and boys' downfalls. Girls tend to develop what the researchers call conscientiousness significantly earlier than boys. Conscientiousness is an adjective that is defined as wishing to do what is right, especially to do one's work or duty well and thoroughly. In school, this means preparing sufficiently for assessments, finishing homework with the utmost effort, not blurting out in class, being patient in class, not talking out of turn, cooperating with the teacher, and following all their directions in the way they are directed. Every single one of those I have trouble doing. I don't have trouble completing my homework. I don't have trouble preparing for tests. I don't have trouble... That's it. Every single thing outside of that, I have a lot of trouble with. And I'm sure that a significant number of my male listeners probably had the same thing, have probably had the same experiences. Boys generally tend to develop this conscientiousness not only years later than girls, but also do not develop comparable levels of it even as it is developed. To prove this, one may cite the obvious gender disparities in the levels of responsibility, specifically when pertaining to grades in project or assignment-based courses, and when pertaining to the percentage of disciplinary action that is directed towards males relative to females. So, for example, in a study conducted by... This has to deal with specifically with race, but I still found some interesting figures that dealt with the discrepancy between a male... reprehensions, I guess... apprehensions, and female instances of getting in trouble, essentially. There is a study conducted by John Wallace Jr., Sarah Goodkind, Cynthia Wallace, and Gerald G. Bachman, basically saying, depending upon the race or ethnicity of the individual, boys were disciplined at nearly twice the rate of girls in school. As a male student in American high school, I know very well and notice very well the behavioral discrepancies between males and females. For example, I've often been a quite talkative and loud student. In middle school, for example, I went to the office multiple times per year, more than multiple times, for my irresponsibility and annoyance. My sister, who is much quieter and far more responsible, has not once been sent to the office and did not once receive a referral from the middle school, even though I received about 7. I remember receiving at least 7, for I was quite the irresponsible lad as a youngster. Thankfully, I'm not that way anymore. I'm still very irresponsible, but not that irresponsible. Not quite that bad. I don't get in trouble in school in that way anymore, thankfully. My poor behavior kind of took away from my learning, and while I still had straight A's without doing much of anything, I think I could have done far better and skipped additional grades of math, potentially, if I hadn't been so irresponsible and careless. This translates not only to my experiences, but to other male experiences as well. My male peers are consistently more talkative and irresponsible than my female peers. In AP US History, pretty much my favorite class, the only female in the entire class who is loud about the subject. And the only students who are not listening are males. Of course, this sample size is quite small and does not provide a set of strong, accurate results, but such problems do likely translate to other classes, as I've seen them do so. The irresponsibility of student males causes this homework score discrepancy, which is likely the reason for which boys get much poorer grades than girls. Another reason for this discrepancy may lay in the realm of insecurity and competition. Girls in school, while more likely to score much higher on tests and perform much better in school, are also far more likely to study for significant periods of time and are more likely to feel unprepared and insecure about major events in school. This general insecurity that women feel in school exists not only within the bounds of a campus, but occurs throughout a woman's life. Boys, on the other hand, are fiercely competitive, likely because of reptilian sexual instinct and many, many other reasons. As a result, boys are less likely to study for tests and less likely to try in school, for they wish to be greater in raw talent than their peers. This competitive instinct, too, does not exist within the confines of a campus, but rather exists throughout eternity for all males. These features, the insecurity over preparedness for women and the competitiveness, the self-confidence of in men, finds itself holding particular significance in the adult life of the man and the woman. Men being more competitive and more confident will be far more likely to be competitive in the workplace and look up to their statuses. Women, on the other hand, in spite of being just as, if not more, suited for a job, will feel more insecure applying for the job and will feel less confident in their abilities, even if they do apply for the job. In terms of schooling, this over-competition in men exists prevalently. Upper-level classes, excluding English, are dominated by men, many of them exceptionally competitive and many of whom are not taking the class seriously. The minority set of women in the class are typically far more advanced and far less competitive than the men, yet they experience significant insecurities with their personal abilities, and thus they are more likely to put in 100% effort to keep up with their grades. The evidence for women are outpacing men in school is overwhelming, and so is the evidence for the behaviors that create this rigid gender gap. But education playing to women's abilities lasts not forever, for the work and office world does not. As we will see soon, while education suits women's abilities, careers suit men's abilities. It is important to understand why there exists such a gender disparity in top offices and in income when women easily outpace men in school. It definitely seems like a significant and unusual occurrence, I would say. While school is likely unintentionally catered more for women than men, the office and the workplace are not. Men occupy 75% of C-suite jobs or executive and managerial jobs, whilst women occupy only 25%. For the top of the top level position, specifically the CEO, women hold only 6% of the jobs, while men hold around 93-94%. Because again, there's always a small amount of room for non-binary and transgender people. In this section, we are to explore the non-chauvinist reasons as to why women occupy few C-suite and upper-level positions, and in the succeeding section, we are to explore sexism as it relates to the workplace, for sexism, too, is a significant reason as to why women remain one step behind in the career land, in the land of the job. A LinkedIn study reported by CNBC attempted to answer the question, why are men more likely to be noticed by employers than women? The answers they received were not stunning, but revealing. They were revealing. I'm going to leave the last reason for the fact that women are noticed less for the next section. Men and women both have similar openness to new job opportunities, so you would expect that there would not be a workforce discrepancy, essentially. 90% of men are open to new job opportunities, whilst 88% of women are the same, meaning that both are willing to explore new opportunities in their respective fields. Women, on the other hand, apply to 20% less jobs than men, meaning that they are more reluctant and less likely to apply for jobs. Women are also 14% less likely to apply for a job than men. The reason for this again lies in confidence. Based upon the study, men are likely to apply even when meeting only 60% of the requirements, but women are often most likely to apply only when they meet 100% of the requirements. Essentially, men apply for jobs even when they are underqualified, and women often do not apply for jobs when they are underqualified, and in most cases are less likely to apply for jobs even when they are qualified. Another thing is women are 26% less likely to request a referral when applying for a job, which can invisibly taint their chances of getting hired. Referrals are one of the most important contributing factors to hiring considerations, and considering women are less likely to ask for referrals, they are thus less likely to get the high-level positions that are far more competitive. The LinkedIn study also concluded some seemingly anomalous patterns in their data. The main anomaly in this study was the fact that women were 14% more likely to be hired than men when applying for a job. This is likely the result of two reasons. First, when women are more likely to apply only when they feel perfectly qualified for a position. And second, women are less likely to take risks in applying for jobs that are more competitive and challenging to obtain. Even if the latter is more correct, the fact that women are more successful in obtaining the job than are men is a testament to the fact that women can do all they wish when they work against their insecurities, worries, and take risks in applying for jobs they are underqualified for, or even jobs that are significantly more competitive than the jobs they would normally apply for. The last reason that pertains to why women are often less likely to get noticed by employers than men that was planned to be enumerated on is based upon sexism. The last reason presented by the LinkedIn study is that hiring managers are more likely to click on male candidates' LinkedIn profiles and job applications. The reason for this likely include the simple subconscious sexism that occurs with employers regardless of their gender in human society. It is widely and erroneously believed that men are superior in the workplace, and this belief translates into the actions of employers upon job candidates' applications. Of course, this does not necessarily apply to all industries, for many industries dominated by females can flip this probability sexism around to the side of women. In some cases, even industries dominated almost exclusively by males, because the challenge to the conformity of a sector, specifically the gender conformity of a sector, can significantly alter a female's possibility of obtaining a job. Not because it's a hindrance, but because they want females to join the workforce, essentially. Even so, this is a startling fact, one which must be addressed by employers around the nation. Solutions presented by the CNBC article included training all involved in the hiring process in a way that defeats such subconscious sexism, or by using software that makes hiring less gender-biased and less gender-based and more merit-based. So basically, they would get rid of the genders on software, which I think is a pretty smart idea, to be completely honest. So there were some solutions that were presented specifically in terms of schooling, not pertaining to getting jobs more. The biggest thing is education in this situation. So a lot of core values in someone are learned in school. We cannot deny this. Now, a big thing that occurs in school is that we have these women developing, or these girls, these young girls developing the conscientiousness, but not only the conscientiousness, but also the insecurity. So a significant solve to this would just be getting rid of the insecurity. But again, how do we get rid of that? And another way is to make it more, I guess, more appealing to men to do good, more appealing to boys to do good, to be able to achieve. Because again, we want boys to get on the same level as women, not for girls to get on the same level as men. Because, I mean, girls are higher in this situation, a much higher level. So we need to get boys up there and girls to stay there so that we can, or well, actually, we would rather have both improve. But of course, men to get to the same level, of course, because that's what is probably what should happen. But anyway, solutions presented in the articles that inspired this topic by the New York Times and the Atlantic dealt specifically with addressing disparities between men and women in schooling, and even more importantly, addressing these disparities in a way that limits female insecurity and increases female confidence while making school more achievable for males. The author of the article, Enrico Nalotti, on The Atlantic, believes that the solution to the educational gender gap is by decreasing the grade significance of schoolwork and increasing the grade significance of tests and quizzes. For tests and quizzes are more reflective of one's understanding of a subject than effort in a class. When applying for a job, you're judged based upon your abilities in the industry that you're applying for a job in. When working in school, your understanding of topics are measured by tests. Thus, tests should be more heavy upon one's grade than schoolwork. This technically is not my favorite thing, for I like having straight 100% because I do all my homework, but I do all all my homework, but across the board, excluding math, English, and Spanish, all of which I never really get grade tests below 100%, I generally score around a 95 to 98 on most of my tests. So an increased grade reliance upon tests may decrease my grade slightly, but not in a way other than damaging my ego. But I mean, by next year, once I'm doing Calc BC or something, it definitely will damage my grades. That actually will damage my grades. But the thing about that class is that, yeah, it's all tests. There is no such thing as schoolwork. There is no such thing as schoolwork. I know that because one of my friends is taking Calc BC right now as a junior. And yeah, there is not a single grade outside of a quiz or a test in the entire grade book. Not a single grade. Not one. Because homework is optional. And no one does it. And then they go on and take the tests and get 75s on them. And look at what happens. Their grades end up being C pluses. And there's a reason for it, of course, that being that they don't put in the effort. Now, that's a little bit different. Calculus is notoriously difficult for humans because it's just so much different, but I mean, really, not. It's not that bad compared to, trust me, the next episode is on abstract algebra. Next episode is going to be dealing with abstract algebra. That's not that bad. Compared to calculus, abstract algebra is terrible. It makes calculus look easy. It makes calculus look like arithmetic, simple arithmetic. I'm not talking about abstract algebraic arithmetic, but rather the actual kind of cool arithmetic. I'm talking about like 4 plus 4 equals 8, 16 plus 94 equals 110, 176 plus 172 equals 248, like stuff like that. Like that's our 348. Like that's the cool stuff. But anyways, probably should go back to this. The author of the article, Lisa Damour, I think, on the New York Times, believes that the solution to the educational gender gap and subsequently the workplace gender gap deals specifically with decreasing the amount of insecurity and an inefficient overwork of girls. The solution lies not within revamping the grading system, but rather within the domain of a family, the author, basically within the domain of a family. The author encourages parental practices like admonishing overwork and advocating healthy lifestyles that are less engaged in stressful school activities. Damour cites her own experiences with her 8-year-old daughter, who, with her, read Harry Potter, a series we know contains a character, Hermione, who is exceptionally schoolish and overworking. Damour pointed out to her daughter the inefficiency of Hermione's work, specifically in how she does not use her time wisely, and even more specifically how Hermione is just as capable without putting in such tedious effort, and that she would likely receive the same grade regardless of whether she overworked herself or not. Such an effort can essentially indoctrinate young girls into not tiring themselves out studying and overworking in school. Like, the difference between a 91 and a 97 in a class in which a 91 and a 97 are both A's is a life. If you understand what I mean there, it means if you get a 97 in the class, you're more likely not to have a life, and if you get a 91, you can still have a life. Topics like this are enlightening to those who feel themselves as failures or as degenerates. I had to say that. I can't even believe that I said that. Many males my age may feel disappointed in themselves because they have poor grades and yet cannot seem to put in the effort to improve their grades. Many females my age may feel disconnected or discontented with their grades because they put in a significant amount of effort and yet still do not achieve the goals they wished upon themselves. They may feel insecure or unconfident, for they tried their hardest and still did not do it as well as they wished. To all my fellow human students who have experienced such problems in school, you are not alone. Your biology and psychology is responsible for the problems you may face, but there are methods by which you can eradicate this. Try not to focus on schoolwork alone, but instead work to focus on extracurriculars in your life. School is a struggle for all of us, but even the smartest of us fail occasionally. Whether you fail or succeed in school, you shall still likely live a good life, for it will all be okay in the end when we really think about it. It won't be the end of the world, I promise. Anyway, thank you all for listening, and as always, have a good morning, afternoon, evening, and night. As I say every episode on this channel's description, there is a link with which you can donate to support the channel and my endeavors. Any donation, whether 1 cent or 100 billion cents, is appreciated. I don't really want $1 billion, but like, I wouldn't mind it. For I have, of course, 12 years of expensive college ahead of me. But anyways, take care and stay curious.